I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Pew Research Center issued a report last week titled Who Runs for Office? A Profile of the 2%. It said this: there are 90,107 government units in this country, everything from county governments to independent school district governments, according to 2012 Census Bureau data. Some governments have appointed officials, but hundreds of thousands of Americans serve in elected office, mostly at the local level. So Pew asked a question about who seeks out the offices and found this astounding thing that only about 2% of Americans have said that they ever ran for federal, local, or state elected office. Why is that? And why is it that we find that women and minorities are so underrepresented when it comes to holding office in America? We'll have two guests with us this hour. Aaron Blake is our first guest, covers national politics and writes regularly for The Fix at WashingtonPost.com. He's a Minnesota native. He's written about politics for the Minneapolis Star Tribune and The Hill, and we reference that September 3rd article. Yes, politics is still dominated by old white men, and he goes on to explain here's why. A little bit later in this hour, the founder and executive director of Vote Run Lead, a national organization leveraging technology and training to accelerate the number of women in civic and political leadership. All hour, we'll be welcoming your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Why do you think women and minorities are so underrepresented, and have you ever thought of running for office? Not many of you have, but those of you who have, a little portion of our audience, call and tell us what your experience was. Aaron, thank you very much for being with us. Hi.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen. It's good to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Does that strike you, when you heard the percentage number, did that strike you as just really low, or was it about what you thought it would be?
Well, as far as the number of people who have run for office, I thought it was probably, it was maybe a little bit higher than I thought it was, but there's lots of small offices around the country. So, you know, the idea that one in 50 people are putting their name out there as far as running for political office, I think is, you know, is about what I would expect maybe. As far as women go, I was surprised that it's only one quarter of all candidates. I think it's probably a little bit higher when you're talking about current candidates. This, after all, was a question about people who have ever run for office at any point in the last several decades, conceivably. So, but there also is, you know, as somebody who has been following congressional elections for several years now pretty closely, I do notice that it is very much a male-dominated world. There's just not as many female candidates out there, which is why we have so few members of Congress who are female.
Mm-hmm. So as the Senator Gillibrand says, and you quote her at the beginning of the article, and she's been all over the press because of her book, Congress today is still very much an old boys club, and more specifically, a white old boys club. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, it very much is. The Congress right now, as it stands, is 80% men. It's 80% white. It's only about 19% women right now, and that's obviously even less so in the Senate. So we definitely still see situations like Gillibrand described, where you know, these older white men don't necessarily you know, have the same kind of workplace you know, manners that we might expect from the rest of the country. And, you know, I think that there's a concerted effort among both parties of trying to get more women on the ballot. But as this poll shows, it's just been difficult to recruit them in a lot of cases. And I think that really starts from the ground level up.
Mm-hmm. And then when we look at blacks and Hispanics, you write that they're not just underrepresented, they're also underrepresented on the ballot in addition to in political office.
Correct. So, you know, the African-American population is about 12% of the United States population. The Hispanic population is about 15%. If you cut those in half, you've got their representation in Congress right now. So 6.5% of elected officials are are black and 8% are Hispanic. So, again, you've got a very severely underrepresented portion of the population, at least if you're just looking at demographic and characteristics. And again, it has to do with fewer candidates running from those demographic groups. And so, you know, the combination of those two statistics and obviously of the men running at three times the rate of women is a big reason why we continue to see an imbalance in our elected officials that, quite frankly, a lot of countries aren't dealing with right now. A lot of countries are much further ahead than we are as far as electing women, including to the top offices in their countries.
Mm-hmm. The then head of the Republican State Leadership Committee told you it is safe to say that there are institutional barriers. What are the institutional barriers? What do we mean by that?
Well, a lot of it is just kind of getting off the ground. I think in politics we underestimate the impact of running for that first office, whether it's running for the state legislature, running for your city council. In order to do that, you need some help. You need people who know the ropes of politics, who can help you raise the money that you're going to need to do that. And his point was that in a lot of cases, these small groups are in fact dominated by men. They have been for a long time, and they still are. And so it's just a little bit more difficult for women to penetrate those small groups and actually kind of get off the ground. It's something that his organization has been working on quite a bit. But really, you have to get Republicans and Democrats at the very smallest levels of American politics to have that initiative, to try and include more women in the process. And sometimes it's just easier to recruit, you know, the people you know, which in a lot of cases are the men.
Mm-hmm. I would think that another big factor here in getting anybody to run for office is how much money it seems to cost, Aaron, these days to do just that. It's just, you look at it and you say, oh, come on, I could never enter that profession. Where would I get the dough?
It is. It's out of hand. I think anybody would tell you that. You know, we know members of Congress who are in the most competitive districts. You know, the most members of Congress don't generally have to worry about their reelection campaigns, but the ones that do have to basically be fundraising constantly. Mm-hmm. Members of the House have a reelection campaign every 2 years, and that means that once they win reelection, they need to start hitting the phones right away for the next election if they want to give themselves the best chance of holding on to their seat. So it's a situation where these members are basically running between the House floor and their campaign committees to, you know, sit on the phone for hours on end and raise money for the next campaign. It's really a huge drain on their time, but it's the reality of where we are in such a competitive political environment.
So what's the answer to that, to keep people from having to be on the phone begging for money all the time?
If I knew, I'd probably, be working on that perhaps. You know, campaign finance is obviously something that that some people will push for. I think that movement is certainly discouraged by what they've seen in recent years with, you know, basically the last big campaign finance effort with Senator John McCain and Senator Russ Feingold has essentially been picked apart,
right,
by the courts over the last few years. And, you know, a lot of people would also argue that that effort, while well-intentioned, has led to, an outsized influence for outside groups, which don't have to deal with these limits. The candidates have to deal with these limits, but the outside groups don't, in fact. So sometimes the best laid intentions are not exactly what you wind up with. And so it's just a very, very difficult issue for legislators to deal with, and there's not a whole lot of appetite to try right now.
Yeah. Aaron, do you know from the Pew study or from your own study, do we find a difference in numbers if we're looking at school boards, state legislatures, governor's offices?
It tends to get a little bit less diverse as you get to the higher levels. State legislatures, you know, they were ahead of Congress as far as electing women, but, they haven't progressed at a much faster rate either. If you look at the percentage of women in each state over the last several decades, it really hasn't changed all that much, at least not as much as I would have expected it to change. You know, as far as the local level, I haven't seen any data on that. But, you know, even if you just look at Congress, you know, the representation of women is better in the House than it is in the upper chamber in the Senate. So I think that it's a gradual process whereby women will be elected more at the local level, and then it will transfer to the state level and then potentially to Congress. But it's a very slow process at this point.
And what about the environment? The senator, aforementioned senator, in her book was talking about how the male senators were making references to her weight after she had just delivered a child, and, oh, don't worry, honey, I like you chubby, don't lose too much weight. I mean, some really offensive kinds of comments. Is that a typical kind of atmosphere? So why run if you're going to have to deal with those kinds of comments?
Yeah, you know, I think there maybe is a little bit of that. I can tell you that the reactions to what Gillibrand was saying have been pretty polarized. I know that, you know, a lot of women were totally unsurprised to hear that. Women who work on the Hill or journalists who cover these members of Congress, and some said that hasn't really been their experience. I think House Speaker Nancy Pelosi even said that she didn't necessarily have the same experience. Now, she was obviously in a different position than Kirsten Gillibrand was. So everybody, I'm sure, has their own experiences. But you know, I think if the Democrats, if the Republicans want to get more women involved in politics, they'd better probably address these issues of making them actually comfortable once they get into office.
Mm-hmm. It is fairly remarkable that we're talking about this, and it is, after all, 2014, right? We would have thought there would have been many more women and minorities in office.
Yes, Congress, though, and especially the Senate, is such an aged institution that has for a very long time resisted change. They don't like to change their rules. They like to take things very slowly. And I think that, you know, that transfers not necessarily just to the legislation that they're passing or not passing. It also translates to the people who are there. Maybe they don't have the same kind of perspective on how quickly American society is changing and the American workplace is changing. And again, this is an institution where, you know, the average member is a white man who's in his 60s. So certainly it's a different perspective than a lot of workplaces that you or I might be familiar with.
Aaron Blake is our guest. The first half of this hour covers national politics and writes regularly for The Fix at The Washington Post. He's from Minnesota, so he has good Midwestern sensibilities. And he wrote a piece for based on this Pew Research Center report, which just came out on September 3rd, that looks at why it is that there aren't a representative number of women or minorities when it comes to elected office, and why so few people run for office as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter, @KDunnShow. Have you ever thought about running for office as a teacher or as a parent or grandparent or whatever? Have you ever encouraged the young people in your family to seek a life in the political realm at whatever level? Or do you see barriers? And if so, what are those barriers? And in terms of governing, does it make a difference whether or not we have a representative group of people, particularly at the national level? What if we fall short of that? Does it make a difference in terms of legislation that we get? We'll be with your phone calls momentarily. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Aaron Blake is with us now. He is the author of a piece, Washington Post, The Fix. Yes, politics is still dominated by old white men, and here's why. Let's go to phone calls. Elizabeth in Hayward, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just called because you had asked if there was anyone that had experiences in running for public office. And 2 years ago, I ran for state assembly in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
I did not win, and I ran against another woman. So I can say is that I didn't was not the target of any kind of sexism anywhere, actually, that doesn't exist in most workplaces, in my experience. But it really, I don't think that anything stood out that way for me.
Why did you decide to run, and why is it that there aren't as many women as men who decide they do run for office?
Well, I decided to run just because I did not like the direction that Wisconsin had taken ever since the passage of Act 10, which, as you know, was quite contentious. So that's why I made the decision to run. My youngest child at that point was already in college, and I didn't have as many home responsibilities as I had had earlier, and I think that may play into it to some degree. You also, most women are working, and most men are working as well, but it's really hard to take the time that you have to have, not only for fundraising, but knocking on doors. And in the district in which I ran, it was a huge geographical area. It's the 87th district, which I think is the largest one geographically in the state, although one of the most sparsely populated. So you're going to spend a lot of time driving around and trying to meet people to garner votes.
Right. And was money an issue, Elizabeth? Did you worry about gathering the funds needed?
Oh, my gosh, I sure did.
Yeah.
Because it's hard to get help from people if you don't have an established track record. And if you don't have the help, it's hard to get the track record. And I know that I invested what for me is a significant amount of my own money into my campaign. But friends and family got calls from me all the time. You're just begging for money all the time.
Which can't be much fun. Erin, would you like to respond?
Yeah, you know, this is a common experience that we hear from candidates. They're always, I don't know if the caller would say that she's surprised about the amount of money that was involved, but it's certainly a huge barrier to entry, the biggest barrier to entry, because a lot of times, you know, especially if you're a challenger, you're going to run up against an incumbent who's been in office for a long time, and donors don't want to give against an incumbent unless they think the challenger is going to win, because then you've made an enemy out of the person who's in office. So, you know, building these fundraising networks remains the biggest obstacle for a lot of people getting into politics, and I think especially for women because of the fact that so many of these networks are dominated by men.
Will you run again, Elizabeth?
You know, I really wish I had done that this time, because I think I would have had a much better chance. I have to see what happens. It depends on who wins this time around, but I'm keeping it open for 2 years from now.
Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Bye. Mary Kay in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. My experience is a little bit different from Elizabeth's. In the mid-1980s, I was elected to the Common Council of a wealthy city in Ozaukee County, and I didn't have any problems in terms of any sexism related to my running for office. I actually ran against the incumbent, who had angered the residents of the district over the widening of Mequon Road, and I went door to door to every single residence in my district in the middle of winter with my 2.5-year-old in the back of my car.
Oh, my goodness.
And I had friends who distributed literature for me, and, you know, I won the election by a landslide. And I served for a term and a half, and then I resigned to go to grad school. I decided, from what I had seen from the vantage point of an elected official, that I wanted to be an urban planner.
Oh.
And so I did. And then I worked for a number of communities during my career as an urban planner. And one of the things that I found working with elected officials, more so than being one, was that there is such opposition on the local level to those types of programs or policies that would make a city better. But if they involve anything like affordable housing or integration, the game is over. It's
really?
Over.
Hmm.
And the other thing, too, is that the majority of people on these boards are older white men. There's just no doubt about it. And I haven't been on a board or council since then, but I've worked with a number, and I don't think that that has changed.
Mm-hmm. And will you run for office again, Mary Kay?
No, I'm 69 years old, and I think I deserve a rest.
Oh, Mary Kay.
I did this when I was much younger. And
you still sound young.
I wish I were 20 years younger because I probably would.
Yeah, you sound like the kind of person who would. Thanks, Mary Kay. Well, we're hearing from all kinds of women, Aaron, who got right in there. Can you imagine that, being knowing our winters here? You know what they're like. You're from Minnesota with a two-year-old going door-to-door everywhere.
Yeah, I think in the Midwest they should probably hold the elections in April or May or
yeah,
something
right.
like that. It might make a little bit more sense and increase turnout, although we do pretty well with turnout up there, I have to say.
Yeah, we do, in both states, actually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting that there are some, I should ask both these women whether somebody encouraged them, but it sounded as though they were motivated by a particular issue, not from somebody coming to them and saying, you really should run, that they really felt as somebody who was politically involved that they needed to pay attention to this issue, right?
Right. A lot of times it's that, and a lot of times it's basically walking into the right situation. Having people around you who can point you in the right direction and say, you know, this is a really winnable race. A lot of candidates kind of struggle with that piece of the puzzle because, you know, they're not political consultants who have been watching this stuff for a long time. And the second caller talked about kind of picking the right time against an incumbent who had some issues. I think if both parties want to increase the number of women they have in office, they need to recruit women into those kinds of races where they have a clear opportunity, you know, in the name of kind of building a big bench of women that can run for other higher offices in the future.
I wonder if you've seen any statistics that show that simultaneous with our disregard for institutions and Congress in particular, we're seeing fewer people decide to run for office because they don't like the institutions they would be a part of.
You know, I haven't seen that. I anecdotally, though, I would say that I think I'm seeing the opposite. We're seeing a lot of, for instance, the Tea Party movement really kind of arose out of a disgust for both the, you know, what was going on in Congress and also in the Republican Party. And we're seeing increased numbers of people running against incumbents in primaries in Congress. It's happening a lot more than it used to. I'm not sure if the same thing is happening on the Democratic side, but it does seem that as people become more disgusted with the political system and the way things are being handled, they do tend to maybe step forward in a little bit higher numbers than they would otherwise because they do want to affect some change and they feel strongly about it.
Yeah. Let's take one more call for you and then same topic, just different guest. Mike in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that it seems to me like the original intent maybe of the House of Representatives at least for having a two-year terms is that there might be more turnover than there is now. That people would serve, you know, a citizen might step forward, serve for a little bit, and then return to their life, like the Cincinnatus idea with Washington or something.
Mm-hmm.
But now, you know, we have people, I don't know if they foresaw people having a decades-long death grip on their seat, and then you get the old boys club, you get money, you get less people running because they can't pay. And the only thing I can think that might fix it is term limit, because if you can't run for re-election, then you don't have to worry about raising money. You don't get the old boys club, and you get more people running for office. And if it's good enough for the president, then why wouldn't it be good enough for at least representatives, maybe senators, too?
Mm-hmm.
I'll take my answer.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, you know, this is something that we see pop up from time to time. It was a big focus, much more so in the 90s, and nothing really came of it. The Republicans back then were pushing hard for term limits. I think that there's, as with campaign finance reform, there's some pessimism that something could actually get done, so we're not seeing a big movement on that front. But, given the numbers that we see as far as approval of Congress, this seems like something that's pretty ripe for some politicians to focus on if they want to galvanize the public behind their campaigns. So, you know, I wouldn't rule out seeing it in the very near future in a political campaign near you.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for being with us. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
Aaron Blake covers national politics, writes regularly for The Fix at WashingtonPost.com. He's from Minnesota, has worked for the Minneapolis Star Tribune and The Hill, and referencing a September third article for The Fix that he wrote, yes, politics is still dominated by old white men, and here's why. Please, if you could just stay on hold, we're going to introduce another guest, but all of your calls will be applicable to the next conversation. This one with Aaron Velarde, founder and executive director of Vote Run Lead. That's all together, a national organization leveraging technology and training to accelerate the number of women in civic and political leadership. She launched VR as Vice President of Program and Communications at the White House Project, establishing the largest national political training program readying women for public office and civic life, training over 15,000 women. She serves on the advisory boards of Girl Meets World, the New American Leaders Project, Democracy.com, and is the New York delegate for Vision 2020. It's a 50-state initiative to increase women in leadership by the year 2020. Aaron, thank you very much for being with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
How's that state initiative going?
That's going well, actually. Just a few months ago, I had a great, we call it a Congress out in Philadelphia, and a lot of initiatives coming out in the local states through the Vision 2020 network.
These figures that we've been talking about that came from Pew look at the number of people who have run for office over a long period of time. Have you noticed anything recently more positive when it comes to women and minorities running for office? Are the numbers going up or not?
I think the numbers are going up at a pretty glacial pace, and that's the issue. It's going to take another 500 years for us to move from 20% to 50%, you know, around women's representation. And I don't know about you, but I don't think we've got that kind of time when it comes to kind of diversifying in the voices of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But we are seeing some of these headliner women, you know, the Wendy Davises of the world,
mm-hmm.
Where folks are getting a type of press around women's leadership. But I don't think we are yet tapping into the power of local women who are making some real innovative changes at the local level and increasing those numbers so that our pipeline is not just, a Michelle Nunn or a Wendy Davis, or a Susan Martinez, where we can name these women on our fingers, but it's unremarkable to be a woman in a national position. And that comes by really building that local pipeline.
What's interesting, and you make reference to this in one of the articles from your organization, 53% of voters in the 2012 elections were women. And the reason, and there's a gender gap here, we also have more women registered to vote than men in most states and a much higher female turnout rate at the polls, which would lead you to believe that we would see more women engaged in politics themselves. They certainly vote in greater numbers.
Well, that's what we've got to do. That's sort of our mission, is turning that voting power, our consumer power, our, economic power. We have this power. We've got to translate it into leadership power. How do we get women voters to think of themselves as women candidates? How do we get not just the parties, but our friends and our neighbors looking at women and going, I think you might be good for the local common council. I think you would make an excellent assembly member. We've got to start looking at women as political leaders and encouraging them to do so. Because of what the earlier guest talked about, there are a variety of barriers that women face that are different. So we've got to go the extra mile because we know that when women get in, good things happen. When we have a diversity of leadership, we open up the agenda, we work across the aisle more likely, we put new things on the agenda that weren't ever there before, we work with our constituents in a manner where we're actually kind of reaching out back into the community, and women in Congress bring home more dollars for their districts. So there's lots of good reasons to get women into public office,
mm-hmm.
And all women. We're talking not just about sort of the highly educated. We are interested in women who, may just have a high school education but want to get on their common council because they know how to get things done in their community. Fantastic. We've got to really diversify the experiences and not just kind of the credentializing expertise that of folks in public office.
We had two women, and we'll have many more calling in to talk to you this half hour, who ran for office. One was successful and one wasn't. One said that she could run because she had more time. Her children were in college. The other woman said that she had a 2-year-old and she, in the dead of winter, was going knocking on doors to get people to vote for her, which was not an easy task. Do we still, because we don't have real parity when it comes to who's taking care of the children and who's taking care of the homes, that's what's holding women back, that they feel that they can do this, but they have to wait to a certain time in their lives?
I think that
big picture, the child care issue and the division of labor around who raises and who's parenting our kids is a big issue for women in the workforce, for women in politics. But, you know, it takes a village, and especially if you are running for office. We have funny stories from our alumni network of, you know, popping their kid in the wheelbarrow and, you know, bringing them along for door knocking, you know, dropping them off at, if it's not grandma's house, it's a friend's, you know, and really scheduling that out. You know, great husbands who have stepped up to the plate and made adjustments in their schedule. It's about planning when you have young kids. It's about really making the time, calendaring it out. You know, a campaign only lasts so long, an election only lasts so long. It's about, you know, making that time work. And that's a personal choice. You see a lot of women who are in public office at the highest levels, like a Nancy Pelosi, who did wait until her kids were older. But I also have a girlfriend of mine out in Colorado who, you know, scheduled her pregnancies around running for office, and she's on the city council, and now she's running for the state house out there. So it can be done, but it's a personal choice, and it's about planning. And it's also about getting more women into office who can help bring their real experiences when it comes to child care legislation, child care policy. But we also see it for women who are not elected, I mean, who are not married, right? They have a really funny kind of conundrum, right? Often we find campaign consultants telling women to take pictures with their dogs if they're single on their campaign material. We've got a really funny story of a state House representative out of North Dakota telling us, I wish I knew how to answer the question, why aren't you married? When she was, you know, one of the young, I think the youngest woman elected to the North Dakota legislature. So we've got it sort of on both sides, whether you have the kids at home and that, you know, and the 2.5 kids and the happy family, or you're, you know, a single gal.
Right. So. Well, I'm all for taking pictures with your dogs. If you have kids, your kids or not, you know, dogs are good. Good campaign material as well, right? We have a ton of people who want to join the conversation, so let's go to Kathy in Waupaca. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Sort of related subject. My husband has run for state assembly a couple times. I would like to run for assembly myself, but, or for any office, but I have been a private music teacher, and I don't have children. Now, right away, people are going to say, I have nothing in common with this person. She has nothing in common with me. So I'm kind of stuck when it comes to that.
Well, sure you have things in common.
In a small town, people do not see it that way.
What do they see?
They see a married woman without children, and they say something's weird there.
Oh, for heaven's
sake.
They
see a woman who did not work at a paying job for an employer, and I was self-employed as a music teacher.
Uh-huh.
They say, we can't identify with that.
Well, you just need to create some songs for them, don't you think? You did. Yeah.
Well, that would be nice. I'm not a composer, though.
Right.
I'm a fiddler.
Are voters that judgmental, usually, do you think? Erin?
I think it's about what your earlier caller said around door knocking, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it is a smaller town, you do have the opportunity to actually go and talk to people face-to-face. It's time-consuming, absolutely. But the idea that you have a piece of literature, your experience is your expertise. You know, whether we've been, you know, music teachers or, you know, teachers in the school system, your, you know, 15 years, 20 years experience is your expertise. Get with a good coach or someone who can help you translate that expertise into language that might resonate with your residents, and knock on those doors and talk about your passion, right? People are interested in voting for people with passion. So you want to be on the Common Council because, and you're going to commit this many hours to it. And it's actually an advantage that you don't have, you know, a boss to go home to. You can make your own, a boss to kind of regulate your schedule. You can make your own schedule. I will be there for the voter. I will be there at every city council meeting. So there are ways to sort of think through this. And I suggest you log on to our community and get connected with some of our members and our resources at VoteRunLead.org, because that's exactly what we're trying to do, is answer those questions that feel the kind of disconnect that women might have around politics.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see ourselves out there. So how do we find others like us across the country who can say, hey, this is how I navigated that?
VoteRunLead.org. Well, and I think the mark of a truly excellent politician, we're all not going to be the same as everybody else. It's America, for heaven's sake. And so the ability to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes and understand somebody else's problems and concerns as though they were your own, that's the sign of somebody who either knows how to fake it very well or is genuine. It's a good thing, right?
Absolutely. And we need more genuine, authentic leaders in public office.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
And, you know, voters interact, you know, most citizens across the United States interact with their local elected official. So it would be nice to have a familiar face, you know, to someone who's knocked on your door when you go into the county clerk's office or when you're, you know, trying to get something passed to say, hey, I remember you came to my door. I voted for you. Here's my concern. And you build those kind of relationships.
All right, Kathy, we hope that we've given you the courage to run. Thank you so much for your call. Caitlin in Door County. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm calling both as a woman and as a young person. And I know in my community, part of the problem with running for any office is in a kind of rural and tourist community, there a lot of us aren't self-employed. So there's the kind of concern and problem of, will I have a job if I run and don't make it into office?
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to, so that's something that I think especially young people and women can kind of, it's something that we have a problem with.
Sure. Erin?
And the rural is so important. We have launched an initiative with some women in northern Minnesota, and they're actually coming to our national Go Run training happening in the Twin Cities later this year in November, and I encourage you to actually come. There's a lot of scholarship money available.
Oh.
The idea around getting more women on these rural county commissions, the Minnesota Women's Foundation did a study a few years back about the number of women on the county commissions, and it was something like for one woman for every 11 men, and all the county commissions that didn't have women on them were actually in rural areas. So it is very critical that young people, particularly young women, go and sit on these county commissions and look at, is there some salaries associated with being a part of these local elected bodies? Can that help you with your supplemental income? If you get your name out there and you lose some more people now in your network, you've got hundreds, maybe if not 1,000 or more folks who know you and are most likely going to give you a job because they saw you take a leadership risk. They saw what you stood for. You're a woman of principle. You know, you're ready to go out there and stand on your convictions. That's the best resume that I know. And that's somebody that, you know, looks like they're good sort of job potential right there.
Is that helpful, Caitlin?
Yeah, that was really great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the call. You know, I'm even thinking about how often we present going into politics in some way, running for office, as a career option for young people. I don't think many young people even think about it.
No, I don't think so. And I wonder if Pew has some research on this, and a lot of the Pew research is about, you know, young people sort of moving away from party identity.
Right.
And that might have something to do with why we don't think of it as a career. But, you know, for young women, we often don't see politics as a place to make change. And I think that's the bigger hurdle to get over, is that there are some things you cannot do as a not-for-profit leader. There are some things you cannot do as a volunteer that you can only do in political office. And kind of reworking that narrative about politics as a place to get things done, particularly in a local arena. And we just had the opportunity to film a series of state legislators from across the country, women who talked about what they were most proud of.
Oh.
And all of these women have amazing pieces of legislation. A woman out of Alaska who, you know, her biggest piece was taking the R-word out of disability rights legislation and a series of other resources and money towards that. And she said no one's touched that bill in 3 cycles. And she said, you know how infrequent that is for your bill not to be looked at, that means you've got a darn good bill. So, you know, looking at and finding women, you know, go and check out those videos, not only ours, but other women's organizations are doing more of the sort of digital storytelling so that we can get these stories of women who are making impact. Because as you said earlier, women are often motivated by an issue, right? We're less encouraged by the parties. We're less likely to be tapped to run. And we're less likely to see a position of power and go, oh, I want to be a state senator for state senator's sake. We want to get into politics because we want to make change. And so we need to go about tapping more women who have that kind of can-do attitude.
Thanks, Caitlin, for the call. Kate in Holman, hi.
Hello. I have a couple of things. The first is that I ran for office 4 years ago, local school board entry position, and won.
All right.
And I had great support from La Crosse County. Men and women, and I have given that back by mentoring my young women that I know.
Great.
That I want to run. Point two is that I think if somebody that was even 70 years old, white, old,
farmer ran against me, he probably would have won.
Really?
There's still a deep prejudice that needs to be overcome. I don't care if it's with women or people of color. It's a hard fight. Mm. And any woman who enters into that needs to be ready for it. What worries me is that there are old white men who might be shy, might not be good leaders, but they get elected.
Why do you think?
Women
Why?
Have a harder struggle. And that needs to be said in Wisconsin. The majority of our electoral districts are rural. They're very, I don't want to say backward, but I will just say it. They're backward. It's the old guys who get it done for them. That's the opinion. And it's really hard for a woman to step forward.
Hmm.
Kathleen, I thank you for the question about child care and who takes care of the family, because that's also an issue, too. When I campaigned, I had a huge group of women working for me, young mothers. I had one woman running with me who had two kids, four-year-old, two-year-old, pulling them in a wagon.
Yes.
Very few men were around us.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a reality that women need to face. So your speaker, I love what you're saying, but it's not that rosy. It's a hard fight as a woman to go into a rural community and run for office.
So, Kate, to what do you attribute your success?
I think my personality.
Uh-huh.
But that kind of makes me mad, too, because my personality is out there, and I'll do it. I'll get her done. But I've got a bunch of women friends who are not as, they're maybe shyer or bolder, but they're such good leaders. But they're too afraid to enter the arena.
Erin.
I want to recognize that it is hard. But I think that there are good men out there, lots of them. And, you know, when we talk to some of our alumni who are sitting on these city councils and, you know, towns with populations of less than 10,000 or less than 5,000, you know, it's a learning process. The men on the city council are learning from them. They're learning from the, you know, men who have been there for 30, 40 years with a lot of knowledge there. But it's worth it, right? And the campaign is only so long. And you know, after you become a third, you know, term incumbent, people start to see more young people, more young women, more women mothers on these boards. It becomes more normal. And that's what we're trying to change, that it's normal, you know, for women to run for office. Right now what we have is it's normal for all men to be on these bodies, right? And that's what needs to change. The idea that a body with, you know, a political body with all men on it over a certain age is, you know, the best collection of talent in the community is probably, I'm going to say that there's probably other perspectives that need to be on that political body. So we've got to shift that idea around, you know, making the impact that you can do, the things that you can do in political office that you can't do as an outsider, make that more attractive, but also, you know, give folks the reality. That's why we're, you know, that's why we're training. That's why we've created this online community. You know, that's why we've put these resources out there, because, you know, there are tips and tools for women to help navigate how we go about this when it gets really hard. You know, when you do have that moment where you kind of break down and go, oh, is this worth it? You've got a community of folks behind you going, yes, it is. You're doing a great job. You know, whether it's a workplace where you're the only person in the only woman in the meeting, or the city council, you know, these are things we know how to do this. We've got to share our wisdom with other women who want to take that leap of leadership.
Erin Velarde is our guest this hour of the program. And thank you so much, Kate, for the call. We're just getting great calls from women who have run for office. It's terrific. Keep the calls coming in. We're looking at the recent Pew study showing that the majority of candidates for political office are consistently white men with higher education. Why that's still the case in 2014, that we don't have many women and fewer minorities in office, why that might not be the best thing for our democracy, and what it is that is holding women and minorities back from entering the race, whatever the race happens to be. Here's our phone number. A couple lines are open now. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, we'll speak with Marianne Cooper about her book, Cut Adrift, Families in Insecure Times. Erin Velarde is founder and executive director of Vote Run Lead. It's a national organization leveraging technology and training to accelerate the number of women in civic and political leadership. And let's go next to Margie in Milwaukee. Hello, Margie.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I was on speakerphone while I was waiting. I'm calling in about the woman that called a little bit ago about not feeling like she had anything in common with people in her town. And it just kind of struck a chord with me because I wanted to get involved, but I've been very hesitant and concerned, partly because of the hateful tactics that are often used, and don't know how much hateful stuff would be directed at me and my family just because of the way they pick apart people's lives sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much I would be anxious for that, but what I wanted to encourage this woman that was interested as well, and she said she didn't have anything in common. If she's a music teacher, she's got to have an interest in education.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's been privately employed, she's got to have interests and information regarding small business in the community, as well as the fight in recent years to keep the arts alive and keeping the arts in education and things where funding's changed. I would think that she would have a lot to offer that community that way.
I'm glad you called a supporter. That's great, Margie. You make an interesting point because campaigns can be very vicious. How do you counsel people about that very issue, Erin?
We counsel them to be prepared,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to also sort of step out of the eye and the it being about you. You're getting into public office because it's about the community, because you want to make change. And there's going to be naysayers. You know, it's never really as bad as we might imagine on the local level. And what's awesome is when a community of women and men come sort of by your side, you know, to see that sort of groundswell of support where you think it's just me. I'm going to have to be sort of sending off these, these anonymous posts on, newspaper websites where people are writing really visceral things. But actually what happens is a community comes to sort of rise to the occasion and to support you. That's actually really awesome. And that's the moment where we've had a lot of women go, oh, this is not just my fight, right? This is an issue I care about that a lot of other people care about in my community. They've been waiting for someone like me to step up. They've been waiting for someone like me to represent them. And it really actually has kind of a positive effect when, yeah, people are going to come at you, but I've got support as well, and I've got I'm standing here on my convictions, and I'm doing this for the community. I'm not doing this to be popular. I'm not doing this to, sort of advance my whatever it may be. We know that women really do come to office to make change, and sort of keeping grounded. We also counsel folks to get what's called a kitchen cabinet, right? Four or five folks around you who you can call at any time when you're in the bathroom and you're about to break down and you pick up the phone and you've got that person who knows to answer that phone because you said, you're my kitchen cabinet member
right.
X.
Right.
They pick up the phone. They're there for you to fill your cup.
Yeah.
Figure out ways to actually refuel yourself.
Thanks, Margie, for the call. We have about a minute left. Nancy and DePere, hi.
Hi. I did run for office, and I won, and I was the mayor of DePere, my community.
Great.
And one of my first experiences was with a mother and her elementary-age child in a library where I introduced myself to the child, and the mother made a comment about politicians all lie to you, which was hurtful, even though she wasn't directing it right at me. But she used the term politician in a negative way, and
mm-hmm.
I think that one of the barriers for women running, even though we have a lot to bring to the table, is the public perception that there is something dishonorable about
right.
pursuing this line of work. And I think as women, one of the things we can do to help other women is to talk to our children and talk to our community members about the dignity of serving in public office and the value of having women at the table.
All right, and you just did that for us, Nancy. Thank you so much. And Erin, we're plumb out of time. Do you want to give a website before we say so long?
Absolutely.
VoteRunLead.org. Our national training is November 21, 22, 23 in Minneapolis. And we've just launched a national campaign called Invitation Nation, where you can invite a female friend to run for office using our e-card.
Oh, great.
Generator.
All right.
Fun. So hop online and find another woman who you think should run, and we'll change that.
Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this hour, and to KP Whaley for our on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We'll be with you again tomorrow. Great conversations ahead.